The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management. This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston, a Beasley Broadcast Group station.
This is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM. Thanks for stopping by. You have reached the zenith of the independently produced fine radio experience.
Pennies in a stream. A sycamore, moonlight in Vermont, hills on a mountainside, snow light in Vermont, telegraph cables, they hum down the highway and travel each bend. People who meet in this romantic setting are so hypnotized by the lovely evening summer breeze warbling of a meadow. You and I and moonlight in Vermont. Evening summer breeze. And I and moonlight in Vermont.
Wasn't that so sweet, Margaret Whiting?
Pop on your magic carpet, and we will fly to a charming little village on the bay. Let's fly away to Cape Cod.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there, you're sure watching the moon. moonlight on Cape Cod Bay. You're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod. You're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
Susan Barrett. Female vocalists at their finest, right here on Tube Talk. All right, people, listen up, said the hard-hitting, fearsome radio executive-turned-talk show host. We've got some news for you. Radio 43, biggest show on the East Coast. Same giant location. Last year we had over 500 attendees, 50 exhibitors, and over 80 tables. So this is the New England Antique Radio Club presenting Radio 43 at the Westford Regency Hotel in Westford, Mass. The big day is Sunday, February 19th, 2012. The show will run from 8 a.m. to noon, 12 noon. $10 admission. Spouse and children are free. No large bills, please. So this will be at the Westford Regency Inn in the Regency Room, Westford, Mass., I-495 at exit 32. Directions and further information is available on NEARC.net, N-E-A-R-C, NEARC.net. That is the official website of the New England Antique Radio Club, who is bringing you Radio 43. So we hope to see you there. It's a great meet, a lot of stuff for sale, a lot of fun people to meet, a lot of great stuff to look at. And not to mention that all-you-can-eat brunch at the Regency, well, that would get me out there on its own. So anyway, we'll be talking this up some more as time progresses here, but don't forget the day, February 19th, 2012, 8 a.m. to 12 noon, Radio 43 at the Westford Regency Inn in the Regency Room, Westford, Mass., kindly brought to you by your pals at the New England Antique Radio Club. So check that out at NEARC.net. Would love to see you. It should be fun. And, you know, here at Tube Talk, speaking on behalf of my entire staff, I would like to wish you all a happy, healthy, joyous New Year's filled with great finds and many good radio rescues. We hope to have a guest tonight, hopefully waiting in the parlor for us. And while he makes himself cozy, we'll listen to a little music, and we're going to talk a little bit about a new feature on the program here. This was something that was suggested to me by a few people, and then a listener chimed in with an email to me that I appreciate a great deal. He goes by the name of Code Fox. His name is Bill Wilson from New York. And this is an idea we wanted to pursue a little bit anyway, and what I'd like to invite you to do is drop us an email at tubetalk1@gmail.com. And what we'd like to do with that is let you opine, let you evangelize your particular positions in the radio collecting hobby, whether that's how you like to hunt up radios or how you like to restore radios, what's your restoration philosophy, what's the best manufacturer in the world, and why do you think that's the case, and why should we all think that as well. I mean, you could drop me a few paragraphs, and I'll be glad to read it on the air, and we'll have a little forum. Listeners can chime in with their opinions and their thoughts and why they think it's a great hobby, because it is. And I'll be glad to read them for you. I will be glad to have a Vox Populi here on Tube Talk. And we're going to kick this off by reading the email that I received from Mr. Wilson, a.k.a. Code Fox. And here we go. I guess there are about as many opinions as there are radio brands or what a repair or restoration is. When I was a kid, and that would be about 50 years ago, there was a thriving business of shops which service radios, TVs, and sometimes small appliances. All these things were not considered to be disposables. We fixed them. That is, replace the defective parts without regard to what might come along next in the service life of the device. The better shops went a bit further and knew what also to do for the good of the device. Had to charge a little more for this, though. Now, all these years later, do we still want to fix a radio? I think not. Otherwise, we wouldn't bother. Restore is another venue, and you can go from practical to fanatical. And that's where the hobby is now. Let's hear from some of you out there and where you're at now. Let's have a few laughs at ourselves along the way about our follies. What is your restoration or repair philosophy? It's all for the good. So how about 500 words or less to be read on later shows? Please, all in good taste. And, of course, it will be edited and considered in the public domain. So there's the kickoff. I encourage you to write in. I'll be happy to give voice to whatever I can. I can't promise to get all of your stuff on, but I will try my best to get the most interesting on. And I would like to thank Code Fox for giving us that swell idea, and that's something I think we should have some fun with this year. So we're going to try to run with that and find out a little bit more about how our listeners like to repair and restore. Do they just do the bare minimums to get it playing again? Do they like to do the full restoration, every capacitor, test every resistor? It'll be fun to find out and to kind of share philosophies and ideas, and we look forward to that.
So long to you, partner. Farewell, goodbye. Goodbye, farewell, so long.
Oh, I'm packing my grip, and I'm leaving today, 'cause I'm taking a trip California way. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home. I'll forget my sins, I'll be making new friends, where the west begins and the sunset ends, 'cause I've decided where yours truly should be, and it's the San Fernando Valley for me.
I think that safe in Satan, he will be waiting when my lonely journey is done. And kindly old Reverend Thomas made us a promise, he will make the two of us one.
So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail, care of RFD. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home.
He'll make the San Fernando Valley his home. He's packing a grip,
duffel bag.
He's leaving today. He's taking a trip.
Which way am I going?
California way.
'Cause I've decided where yours truly should be, and it's the San Fernando Valley for me. I think that I'm safe in stating, she's gonna be waiting when my lonely journey is done.
And kindly old Reverend Thomas made us a solemn promise, he's gonna make the two of us one.
So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail, care of RFD. I'm gonna settle down, never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home, sweet home. Make the San Fernando Valley.
San Fernando Valley, Johnny Mercer with the Barrys providing the backing vocal. Orchestra conducted by Paul Weston. That's a recording from January of 1944. From Admiral to Zenith, we're here for you, the radio enthusiast, the discriminating music lover. This is your program. You have uncovered your entree into the coolest hobby on the face of the planet, the world of antique radio. And we're very pleased tonight to welcome Dave Seeker of the New Jersey Antique Radio Club to our cozy radio parlor this evening. Dave is, from what I understand, one of the founding members, and their video maven, so to speak. He puts a lot of great stuff up on the NJARC website for us all to watch, whether it's technical seminars they're conducting or great guests who've come down to address the folks at NJARC, like my pal John Coomer. And I had no idea John was such a comedian until I watched his little video that you had up on the site. So in addition to be a great publisher and an all-around swell radio guy, I had no idea he had such a great sense of humor. So, Dave, I think what we'll do here is we'll start from the end because that's the way my brain works. Dave wanted to mention, we talked a little bit yesterday about some of the things we'd like to go over, and one of the initiatives of the New Jersey Antique Radio Club, of which Dave is a member, is their effort at InfoAge, and I know you wanted to make sure we got to that. So why don't we start with that first, and Dave, maybe you can tell us a little bit about InfoAge. I know Rich touched on it when he was on with us last time, but if you could expand maybe a little bit on that and tell us what you're doing down there, I think the audience would love to hear.
Sure. Always happy to, you know, do whatever we can to help promote the antique radio collecting hobby. We're our club has a museum, has a home at InfoAge, which is on Marconi Road. Now, how cool is that for an antique radio club to have a home address on Marconi
Road?
Well,
we should all be. So just another reason I'm very envious, you know, so.
And we're actually in some buildings that Marconi himself built in 1914 as part of his transatlantic radio transmission and receiving system. This was a this was the receiving station for his for a very, very early commercial radio site. And Marconi himself built some of the buildings that that are now part of InfoAge, and we're in them. I mean, it's just an absolutely fabulous place for radio.
You couldn't ask for much better than that. I mean, that's sort of a dream. That's akin to my pals out in California who have radio station KRE that they're restoring. You know, I mean, they're just certain venues that are just such great fits. And the Marconi locale for you guys, it's just a beautiful thing.
Right. Now, InfoAge is actually the brainchild of a fellow named Fred Carl, who has virtually single-handedly in the beginning just put together an absolutely phenomenal, just a visionary organization. It's a science and history learning center. The New Jersey Antique Radio Club is just one part of it, and it's a vision that we're all just really, privileged to kind of work with him on, and it's sort of a work in progress that I suspect will be may take longer than my lifetime before it actually comes to its full potential. But it's we've got 100,000 square feet of museum and exhibit space right now, and another 100,000 square feet of empty buildings that we can grow into over the coming years.
That's like a real estate agent's dream. Now, Dave, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about what activities do you guys perform down there? Are you doing workshops or seminars, or is it lectures, or have programs for guests who visit, or is it something where somebody would just simply come down and view the exhibits you've put together?
Well, people are welcome to come by. We're open currently open on Sundays from 1 to 5. It's in Wall Township in Monmouth County, New Jersey. But wherever you're coming from, I guarantee you it's worth the trip. There's actually a complex of museums. Again, the Radio Technology Museum is one of several museums there. It's also a World War II living memorial site, and there's a lot of World War II history there. After the Marconi era, the site went through several iterations, one of which, a lengthy one, was the U.S. Army Signal Corps, and a lot of the super secret radar research was done in World War II on that very site. We have a radar museum there, and there's a number of other exhibits for people to see. The whole InfoAge vision is actually for school children, actually children of all ages, to have a place where they can go to sort of become exposed to and enthusiastic about science. We don't really teach science in the schools as aggressively as some places might, and we've sort of taken up our mission to sort of maybe pick up the slack a little bit and give the kids something that they can look forward to and aspire to become the next generation of people that advance the scientific research and the scientific history in this country.
Well, that's, you know, for kids of all ages, that sounds like you're ready for me to come down, you know, for a visit for that, because that's about the size of it.
A lot of kids of fairly advanced age age to come down there and have a pretty good time.
Well, you know, that's the rap on a lot of guys in this hobby is, you know, those little boys never grow up and they love to play with their radios and their televisions and their trains and, you know, anyway, it sounds like sort of almost a very neat tribute in a way to the scientific section of the Greatest Generation. You know, it just sounds like a great place. Now, I'm going to mention this, and this is just very coincidental, but this is something you folks might want to follow up on, and I'd be glad to put him in touch with either you or Rich. I had a conversation with a fellow when I was on my way into the station today. This fellow had sent me an email a few weeks ago, and you know, I said, well, you know, we'll get back to you. His name is Cam Trowbridge, and he has just written a book, The Amazing Marconi, which, from what I understand, is on sale on Amazon right now. So I called this fellow up, very nice gentleman, and I had Googled a little bit about his book and himself, and apparently he's done a variety of different presentations. He was up here. There's a Marconi site and a museum dedicated to Marconi, I believe, up in Chatham, Mass., which was a site of another facility, apparently, that was in this Marconi network. And he was up there recently. They had opened a museum down in Chatham in November of 2011, and he gave a little talk and obviously pitched his book, but he certainly knows a lot more about Marconi than myself. He's actually from West Virginia, so, you know, I know he does travel, I think, because I've seen him pop up in all these different locales where he's agreed to present. So, you know, if you're at all interested, I'll get you his contact information, and he might be somebody who'd be thrilled to come down to InfoAge. I think that might be a natural fit.
Yeah, we'd love to have him. I mean, I'm sure he'd have a good time. There's some original Marconi artifacts there, and, you know, Marconi's our local boy makes good. So, yeah, we'd be thrilled to talk to him.
Well, you know, that's a great effort, and, you know, I'm very impressed with the outreach angle as well, especially to the young. And I guess, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you talk about science isn't taught as aggressively in school as it could be. You know, one of the things that strikes me is, in this hobby especially, you find people very gifted with their hands, gifted with their knowledge as far as being able to rebuild radio equipment or television equipment. And I get the impression, the definite impression from a lot of kids and even, you know, my own son and his contemporaries and teenagers, you know, we've turned in really to a nation of users of technology in that generation. You know, and I don't know how many of them actually think about, I could be an inventor. I could come up with something fantastic. I could innovate. And, you know, when it's something that you can do with your hands, like repair an old set or restore it, and you can say, yeah, that's technology, and I knew the theory, and I put this back together, and I wired it right, and it works. This is intense, you know, and I can listen to somebody from Radio Romania. I mean, that's pretty cool. But now with the computers and all, I don't think anybody ever thinks about taking the back off your computer and getting in there and doing some work. Maybe a few do, but maybe not as many as used to.
When the people come through the museum, when we take them through the museum, a lot of them can get through the whole exhibit in 2 minutes flat, but a surprising number, and sometimes even the younger people, are really fascinated, and you hope that you catch them and you give them a little bit of a perspective.
Yep.
And maybe get them started on something. You mentioned computers also. We do have a computer museum down there, and for a lot of the younger kids, the computer museum is actually a draw to bring them in, and then they see the radio museum, which is totally outside of their realm of experience, and they get drawn into that too sometimes. There's a lot
great
of kids out there with some potential.
That's great. You know, it's like you go to the yard sale and you show your kid how you used to play Pong, and you thought that was really cool on TV, and the kid looks at you and goes, gee, Dad, you know, what a loser. You know, but, you know, for those of us who can remember, I can remember in my high school, I'm just on the cusp of that generation. We still had a typing class, and they were still using electric typewriters till the Wang word processing stuff came along. So, I mean, for somebody who's even in their 50s, that would be kind of a trip to go down and check that stuff out from people who remember Commodore computers and computers at Radio Shack, and, you know, to see where we've come. Again, it's an amazing journey that's just compressed in such a small amount of time. It's really impressive that there's an institution down there like InfoAge that's there to keep the history in the forefront and to allow people sort of a nice venue to go and be with it, you know, as opposed to having to pick up a book or read about it on the computer. So I'm glad we got a chance to address that. And maybe you could give us another little perspective on what your activities are with NJARC. I know you're sort of the video guy down there, and you put a lot of neat stuff online for them. And from what you were telling me, you're also a founding member. Maybe you can give us a little background on the whole genesis of New Jersey club. From what you were telling me, it was sort of a spinoff almost of the New England club.
Yeah, your local AM audience up there might be fascinated to find out that there's actually a pretty close tie between the clubs. Back in 1992, a fellow named Tony Flanagan used to go up your way and attend the New England club meetings because there was nothing here, and Tony would sort of grouse that, you know, gee, I wish we had something locally in New Jersey. And Marty Bunas, who was running the operation up there at the time, you know, he said, Tony, start one. And Tony said, me, you know, I don't even know which end of a soldering iron to hold. But Tony was not the kind of guy who ever, you know, took a challenge lightly. And he came down and, you know, came back to New Jersey and started the club. And here we are. It's 20 years later now.
Well, you know, I love visiting your site, and I like to check in on what's going on, and I've subscribed to The Reflector. And, you know, for anybody who's, you know, in a radio club, I mean, every different club is set up a little and organized a little different based on who's a member and what's the level of technology of the leadership especially. And what I find really neat about NJARC is I like The Reflector especially, you know, where guys will just drop a quick message out that everybody can see. You know, I found a couple of interesting sets on the web. You know, here's the URLs. Check them out. Maybe you like them. Or somebody having a problem restoring a set and is sort of a plea for information, and they could put that out there. And, you know, it's a nice way for the club to keep in touch with each other, even though, you know, they have monthly meetings and all that. It's nice to be able to feel, you know, I can throw something out. And there are forums online where you can go, but it's nice within the club, too. I think it helps build the relationships.
Well, I got to tell you, Paul, I mean, I've been monkeying around with radios, I just realized, for about 46 years now, ever since I was a kid in grade school, and I thought I was pretty good at it. But there's so much that I didn't know before I hooked up with the club, and frankly, there's so much that I still don't know. The level of technical expertise in the club is just absolutely amazing. There are people in there who know. I mean, in the aggregate, in the total, we know everything. We have the smartest people in the club who know all this stuff. And if you can't figure something out, you can just about be guaranteed that there's somebody there who does know about it and would be willing. I mean, and happy to help you figure it out. It's an absolutely phenomenal resource like that. I mean, most clubs, I think, are like that.
Yeah, and people are happy to share, too. You know, it's funny because, you know, from our conversations prior to being on the air, I gather you're not really a complete restoration whiz, and I'm not. You know, I don't do my own stuff. I have to rely on others. And sometimes, you know, you go to a lot of these meets and you hobnob with a lot of these folks and you say, you kind of feel like you need the old, you know, the radio therapy couch because you feel a little inadequate after a while. You say, you know, here I am with my little collection and I know some of what's going on, but it's just kind of jaw-dropping when you listen to some folks. You know, you tell them a few symptoms and they just lay out, you know, several possible paths of things that are wrong, and as it turns out, it usually is one, and you just kind of go, wow, it's so cool.
Yeah, I'm not an engineer. I refer to myself as a shade tree engineer, self-taught, marginally adequate. I could have been an engineer, but I chose to go over to the other side, and I ended up being a producer of television programs as opposed to maybe an engineer who made television cameras. And that's actually what brought me to my specialization, if you will. I started out collecting radios, but I specialize in collecting televisions now, and it's also what brought me, I was interested in the whole phenomenon of the live webcasting when that became feasible a few years ago, and we've been doing that with the club for quite a while now, and it's, you know, it's something that I like to think is a huge value added, and it's something that I can, you know, bring to the hobby, whereas I, you know, I can't be the world's leading expert on some technical facet, but I can help preserve and disseminate this knowledge, and that's really, you know, where I like to feel that I can fit in sometimes.
Well, you know, that's really a great lesson, too, for anybody who's, you know, even remotely interested in getting into this hobby, and certainly, you know, up here, a lot of radio enthusiasts, you know, are kind of graying, so to speak. But, you know, for somebody who might not know Ohm's Law and, you know, may not be adept with a soldering iron and may not have a lot of test equipment and, you know, not even sure, you know, what's going on if they pulled off the back of a set and pulled out a chassis, everybody has their own gift that they can bring to the hobby. And yours is the, you know, videography and the ability to get things up online and let all kinds of other people share. I don't have the technical gift of restoring your Philco 42322, but you know what? I have a platform here where I've been fortunate. I've had a lot of great guests willing to come on and share their knowledge. And, you know, if I can kind of give a voice and a platform for the collectors who really enjoy this, and, you know, I certainly like my collection and I love listening, and, you know, I still enjoy doing a little shortwave and a little AMDXing. That's what brings, you know, fun my way with my old equipment. But you know what? I don't need to be a guy who can take something apart and put it back together again to have fun in the hobby. So anybody who's not, you know, a radio serviceman or an aspiring radio serviceman, it's no reason to be reticent about getting involved in the hobby. There are plenty of people who are very willing to share and help you. And if there's something you can do or you can bring to your club or you could bring to folks in your area who run a meet or a swap, you know, if it's even just organizing and helping take people at the door and checking them in or taking an admission or helping them carry the sets back out to their car, I mean, that can be fun. And, you know, there's a lot of different angles on the hobby, and that's something that I'm constantly impressed with. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that there's somebody else who's not a radio repair whiz kid who's having fun out there.
And we tell people, you know, you come by, sometimes it's pretty easy. We can turn you into a radio repair whiz 9 times out of 10 if you want to learn.
Well, you know, one of the things we started to do up here at the New England club meets, one of my counterparts in the club, Ross Hochstrasser, who's been on the show a couple of times. And, you know, Ross is one of these people very gifted with his hands. You know, he's a horologist. He's a watch and clock repairman in his, you know, real world job. And then he's also, you know, extremely gifted, and he specializes in restoration of European sets, you know, the Grundigs and Siemens and Sabas. And he's conducted little mini workshops at some of our swap meets. So for, say, 10 or 12 people who are interested in learning on capacitor replacement, you know, please head over to the side table, and Ross conducts his 20, 30-minute seminar, and people get to ask questions, and maybe they get a little hands-on. And, you know, they're quite enthusiastic, so we've been pleased with the response that we've gotten to that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I know that some of the clubs do, and I talked to Rich a little bit about it, is you guys go out on radio rescues, or you go looking, you know, to save old sets. I was talking to Mark Oppett, and he's talking about it, but the Michigan clubs sort of have a formal you know, radio rescue program. And I don't know if that's something that you guys pursue really actively. Is that the, you know, do you ever get word from somebody who said, gee, my dad passed away, he had all these radios, are you guys interested?
As the club has sort of, you know, grown and word gets around, yeah, we seem to get approached more and more frequently. You know, estates and whatnot, people say, oh, my husband, my late husband, or my brother, my uncle had all these radios, and I don't know what to do with them. And well, we do. We're able to help them out in any number of different ways, and that works out to everybody's benefit. And most people seem to be interested in getting those radios into the hands of people who will appreciate them, as opposed to a lot of times they're actually just thrown away.
Yeah, into the dumpster.
I know. That actually does happen. I
cringe.
We go out with the you know, with a van or vans, and
sure,
fill up and bring them back. And actually, that's another thing with our association with InfoAge. We've got a, you know, very high profile down there now with the museum, and the amount of stuff that that just literally walks in the door every year would literally, you could get buried in it.
Well, that's super. You know, I mean, that's instead of having to go out and hunt stuff up, it's great, you know, that people know that you're a resource for evaluation and for maybe restoration and for salvage and you know, to preserve. You know, it's great to have people know that they have some place to go with it. You know, it was all talk about rescues, you know, especially when I was talking to Mark, I was having these visions in my head. This could be, you know, a movie for you to film now. You could be the video guy on this. I have a bakery in my neighborhood, and this kid's, he's a real hot ticket. He bought this beautiful old vintage Cadillac ambulance from the 70s, and the thing is absolutely mint. And I think somewhere in the back of his head, he's going to use it to deliver, you know, stuff from his bakery. That I want to borrow this. You know, we load it up with a few technicians. You know, NEAC does a radio rescue. We drive out, you know, to the Atwater Kent site with the ambulance. You know, we hop out. We put the Atwater Kent on the gurney. You know, we get the patient playing again, and then you see him in the recovery room, you know, and it's a news broadcast from 1010 Winds. And I mean, I don't know. This is just a short sketch or something, but it's just kind of a neat concept, but it's true. I mean, this is what people are trying to do, really, is to go out and find this stuff get it working again, bring it back to life. And if it's something that's particularly rare or historically significant, it's great if it can find home in a museum or someplace like InfoWage. It's encouraging to hear. What's in your collection, Dave?
Well, I started to specialize in televisions. It was one of those things where, like I say, I was in the business, and I guess one day, 25 or 30 years ago, a buddy of mine moved into a new house, and he said, "Hey, I know you collect those antique radios. I found this old TV up in the attic. Would you be interested in it?" And I said, "Well, I guess so, sure." And, 200 and some televisions later, here we are. It's a pathology. But I've got a bunch of sets, and I have one, very rare set from 1939, back from the, sort of the dawn of commercial television broadcasting in the United States, and everything, in between from there to, stuff in the late 50s or early 60s. I've got a couple of them on display down at our museum, and, people always seem to really sort of stop and notice that. A lot of people haven't even seen an old black and white TV playing. They don't even know what they're looking at sometimes. So it's sort of fascinating. It's a lot of fun.
Now, do you favor one manufacturer over another, or do you like to have a little bit of everything, or do you hunt out sets that are rare from, smaller, more obscure manufacturers? Do you have a favorite?
I love them all. I mean, the old sets.
Equal opportunity.
The 7-inch electrostatic sets, the 10-inch sets from the late 40s, they're all an awful lot of fun.
Something that was kind of neat, when I was very fortunate a couple of years ago, before I even came up with the concept of this show, I was lucky enough, I had met this fellow who does the overnights on WBZ up here, and I told him, well, not only do I listen sometimes, but I listen on vacuum tube equipment. Well, he was kind of interested in that whole thing. And he says, He said, that might be a good topic. He says, why don't I have you on some night, and we'll take calls from people who've got old radios, or they're trying to get them fixed, or they want to know if something's rare. Or I said, sure, I'd be glad to come by. So I go over to their studio, which is, they're a CBS-owned station now, and it's a very modern facility. It's, it's gorgeous. It's everybody's dream, right? So I go down to the studio, and it's around midnight. I'm waiting for my friend to come find me in the lobby. So I'm sitting there. They got the flat screen TV on with the 11 o'clock news and everything. So I look over to my right, and there's this old Victor, prior to the RCA merger, an old Victor radio, like a little console model. And on top of it, they have an ad for a high-definition radio. I'm like, oh, no, please. But anyway, so I went around the back, and I looked, and I said, this is really cool. This is sitting in your lobby. It's not working. It looks like everything's there. It's very clean inside. I said, this should be restored. So then the guy says, oh, well, what do you think of this over here? And he goes over, and he has a nice Philco Predicta. Thing's in beautiful mint condition. Now, I don't know if it's been at the station for, however many years or what, but I said, you guys have got to get these things up and running, because if you want to have your little museum within the studio, I said, these are two pieces of history. So, the predictors are kind of cool looking, too. They have that sort of Jetson look, and it kind of catches people's eye.
Yeah, they've become pretty iconic lately. You see those in a lot of ads, and a lot of the television programs use that as a cool retro look now. They probably don't even know what they're looking at, but we do.
Now, here's a question for you. Maybe you can illuminate me a little bit on this. In the world of digital TV, where an analog set would work if you had the converter box, I mean, is there an interface to watch current programming, or do you play stuff from DVDs and feed it into your old set somehow? What do you do for a source of programming, collecting the TVs?
You could do it either way. I mean, I have a little 7-inch set in my living room with the rabbit ears hooked up to the digital converter box, and we pick up the new digital signals and convert them over to analog and
That's great.
Feed them into the TV, and there you go. You can watch the off-air signals. What's actually a lot more fun, though, is you cheat and you play it off of a DVD, and then you can play the old programming.
That's right. Uncle Milty.
A lot of times what's fun, we'll do displays. We do displays at museums or libraries shows. We'll take out, do little traveling displays with the club. Sometimes we'll set up a TV, and you put the rabbit ears on the top of the set for effect, and you kind of hide the DVD player, and people come by, and they do a double take, and they say, how do you do that? You say, hey, if you want to watch the old shows, you got to have the old TV.
That's it. I do that. One of the reasons Well, I have a couple of console sets. I don't have a lot of room for them, but, you know, you can take the CD player with the RCA jack and you kind of tuck your CD player up on the shelf next to the chassis, and it really gives the impression for the casual observer, wow, you know, you're picking up, how are you getting this stuff? And, it sounds pretty good. But, it's a good way to publicize the activities of your club or your venue, like if it was at InfoAge. And they're catchy. You know, it's a little piece of history. And the other thing you might notice with the programming is, you know, you talk to a kid or somebody who's younger and not exposed to older programming, you know, just radio kind of gave birth to the TV stuff, a lot of the same types of programs. And if you look at TV in its infancy and what the programming was compared to what we have now, what do we got? Talent shows, contest programs, you know, music. There's so much that it's gussied up and it's a lot fancier and there's a lot more lights and the technology is different. But you know what? Conceptually, a lot of the programming is very close to what it was when it first came out. So I don't know how much we've really evolved, but the technology certainly has.
Well, they didn't call it the golden age of television for nothing, you know. I'm not sure how far we've come.
Well, that's a good question. I think sometimes because our devices and our gadgets are better, we give ourselves too much credit for how we've really progressed. And one of the other things I mentioned on the show before with different guests, one of the things, you know, one of sort of my missions on the show and one of my missions when I meet people and they want to learn about the hobby is, you know, I think that there's, especially amongst younger people, there's this sentiment that if it hasn't been developed in the last 15 or 20 years, it's, you know, it's prehistoric. And you look at some of the, you know, Philcos from the 30s that were experimenting with, you know, real fidelity in music and beam of light pickup for phonographs. And you look at some of these things that one thing would lead to another, and how cutting edge some of this stuff was. And also given the fact, especially with a lot of this stuff in the 30s, that a lot of this development was occurring when the country was in this, you know, hideous economic depression. It's an absolutely amazing testament to the genius of many of these people, whether they were the manufacturers or the, you know, people who put money together to run the companies, or the people who actually did the theory and the electronic engineering to draw the stuff that could be created in the factories. It's a great story, and you know, it's another reason I think I have to get down to InfoAge. I have to come down to see you guys.
It's when you think of what those old guys did with the level of technology and the level of equipment that they had, it's just astounding what they accomplished with the old analog technology. It really was awfully difficult, and they really did work some miracles back then.
Now, just as we kind of come, you know, as we, unfortunately, we never have enough time to talk to all of our guests, but as we kind of get close to winding up here, anything big on the radar screen, any upcoming events you'd like to post us on, anybody who might be listening down in the tri-state area, or anything going on at NJARC of note that we should know about?
Well, I can tell you that we have one of our repair clinics will be coming up. All of our events are posted on the website, www.njarc.org. The repair clinics are great. You know, people come in and they get to have an expert go through a set with them and, you know, kind of learn how to fix it and maybe even fix it right then and there. We have a display coming up at one of the local libraries that a couple of the guys threw together over the last couple of weeks, and this is an opportunity for, you know, the general public to see us in an environment where, you know, they don't have to come to us. We come to them, and, you know, we're constantly amazed at how many people never even knew there was any of this stuff around anymore.
That's great.
So we try to do these library displays and so on and so forth. So there's always something going on. There's, you know, every month, every quarter, we've got, you know, an awful lot of things going on. And it's all, like I say, it's all on the website. So that's the best place to kind of stay tuned for what's happening locally here.
So I guess the moral of the story is monitor the website. I like the idea of the repair clinic. I could probably fill up a small van and come down and suck up everybody's time some Saturday. But, you know, the display idea is kind of neat. And, you know, we're fortunate. I don't know what you have down your way, but we're very fortunate up here in New England. And if anybody who listens is into the hobby, I'm sure they're familiar with this store. We have this place called You Do It Electronics, and the place is an absolute throwback. They've got sales, you know, they can sell you the latest in DJ equipment and TV and radio. They've got a of department of parts downstairs that's just amazing for any facet of ham radio, antique radio, modern technology that you might be interested in repairing. They've got all the tools. They've got all the stuff. They've got manuals. They've got books. And I mentioned before on the show, they actually have set up a little tube display. Vacuum tube display is back at the You Do It store, and it's primarily to feed the demand now for antique audio tubes for amplifiers with the musicians. It's becoming apparently, you know, much bigger than anybody anticipated, this urge to restore a lot of these great amps that were based on tubes. So I walked in there one day, and I see a glass display case, and it's filled with new old stock tubes. I'm like, this is great. Well, the guy says, if you like that, he says, we've set up a display, and in their lobby now, they have sort of a rotating display that I guess some of the radio collectors and different, you know, hams have put in old communication receivers with a little note card telling you a little bit about it. And last time I was in there, they had a couple of old Emersons that were pretty neat. They have a big old Philco and a Westinghouse in there. But it's a nice part of the hobby to see that there are people who not only want to practice with electronics, but still have a respect for what, you know, came before them, for the folks who were the pioneers. So it's great to see that it's being kept alive. It's great to see that NJAC is helping stoke the fire in the preservation furnace. And Dave, you guys are always welcome here on Tube Talk. It was great to have you on. I appreciate your time, and we look forward sometime to getting down there. Maybe we could do a remote broadcast. That'd be pretty cool.
Well, thanks, Paul. We really love what you're doing, so we're always happy to help out any way we can.
Thanks again for being on the show, and good night, Dave.
Okay.
Take care. Freddie Martin and his orchestra, Bubbles in the Wine. And once again, just to remind you, this is WRCA. You're listening to Tube Talk. We are the show for the antique radio enthusiast, the music lover, the person who still likes to listen to the music on the radio. It does sound so good. And here we go.
Once in love with Amy, always in love with Amy. ever and ever fascinated by her. Set your heart on fire to stay. Once you're kissed by Amy, tear up your list, it's Amy. Ply her with bonbons, poetry and flowers. Moon a million hours away. You might be quite the fickle-hearted rover, so carefree and bold, who loves a girl and later thinks it over and just quits cold. But once in love with Amy, always in love with Amy, ever and ever sweetly you'll romance her. Trouble is the answer will be that Amy'd rather stay in love with me. You might be quite the fickle-hearted rover, so carefree and bold, who loves a girl and later thinks it over and just quits cold. But once in love with Amy, always in love with Amy, ever and ever sweetly you'll romance her. Trouble is the answer will be that Amy'd rather stay in love with me.
Dean Martin from a 1948 recording.
I love you, a bushel and a peck, a bushel and a peck, and a hug around the neck, hug around the neck, and a barrel and a heap, barrel and a heap, and I'm talking in my sleep about you,
about you.
About you.
My heart is leaping, having trouble sleeping.
Cause I love you, a bushel and a peck. You bet your pretty neck I do.
Do, 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 do.
I love you, a bushel and a peck. A bushel and a peck. Though you make my heart a wreck. Make my heart a wreck. And you'll make my life a mess. Make my life a mess. Yes, a mess of happiness. About you.
About you.
About you.
Although you grieve me, never, never leave me.
I love you, a bushel and a peck. You bet your pretty neck I do.
Me all to heck, how I'll ever tend the farm, ever tend the farm, when I want to keep my arm. About you,
about you,
about you.
The cows and chickens go into the dickens.
I love you, a bushel and a peck. You bet your pretty neck I do.
Do, 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 do. You bet your pretty neck I do.
We'd love to hear from you here at the show. Don't forget our mailbag idea. We're here at Tube Talk, TubeTalk, the number one, at gmail.com.
Didn't love you so.
torture me as long as this, I might be smiling by now with some new tender friend. Smiling by now with my no, you're still there. I wish I didn't love you so.
That was Betty Hutton. Thanks for listening to Tube Talk. We love you. This is Paul Burish signing off. We'll see you again next week. Mm-hmm.